Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for taking the time to come here and listen to me talking about how you can improve performance in the Windows client from an infrastructure point of view. When I say performance around the Windows client, what do you think about? I can promise you that each and every one of you in this room have your own view on what performance means to you. Machines that are running slow can be made running faster by optimizing performance. By optimizing performance, you can create a good user experience. A good user experience is something that your users will really appreciate. And probably also you, because I guess the reason you are here is because you do not like slow running Windows machine. Am I right? Good. So my goal for this session is that you will have a number of tips and tricks, tweaks, that you can take with you, apply to your environment or at your customer sites starting on Monday. My name is Andreas Stenhall. I work as a consultant for a company in Sweden called Knowledge Factory. I do consulting, teaching courses, lecturing, etc. Very dear to my heart is Windows client and Windows server deployment and management, and that is my area of expertise. Whenever I'm not working, I do a lot of cooking, which is a great interest to me. Most of the times I make people happy, sometimes not so happy. At least no one ever got sick of eating my food, so I guess that's positive. Anyway, speaking of cooking, let's see what I've cooked up for you for the next 60 minutes. Although there are a lot of things you can do to improve performance from a Windows client perspective, you can optimize hardware, you can do some register tweaks, you can optimize services, etc. But the scope of this session is infrastructure changes. So this is what we will be looking at today. So let's bring it on. When you talk to a user about performance, what kind of feedback will you get? Well, the machine is starting slow. That's number one. Slow logins. The applications are not working as good as they are supposed to. Local applications, remote applications, web applications, you name it. We have slow file transfers. Working with files is not many times producing the best experience for the users. And what can we say about all these things for branch offices or for users working remotely? Well, these kind of performance problems become even more prominent. So let's start with the slow machine startup and login. I forgot to mention that performance is something that is individual. It is relative. Some people might think starting a machine taking 1 minute is good performance. Some might think 5 minutes is a good performance. It's all relative. Too many times I hear companies that have users coming into the office, they fire up their machine, they go grab a cup of coffee, only to come back and see that the machine has not even presented the login screen yet. Are you familiar with that? Yeah. That is not a good user experience, and it's not good from an economical point of view as well. The thing about performance is that it can always be improved. It's all about figuring it all out. So what can we do to fix these problems? Well, number one, we have a tool called Windows Performance Toolkit. It is a tool that is included with something called Windows SDK for Windows 7, Windows Software Development Kit. It's a free download from Microsoft. And this kind of tool will actually help us assess what is going on during a machine boot and login. And it is the only tool that you can use to actually troubleshoot and find out what is going on when the machine is starting and booting and logging in. We can use it to make performance measurements, boot shutdown, and a bunch of other things. CPU, disk IOs, etc. And let's get on with the first demo. And have a look at what the Windows Performance Toolkit really is. So I have a client, a Windows 7 client, where I have installed Windows Performance Toolkit. It is installed in Windows C Program Files, Windows Performance Toolkit. Here we see a number of applications. The one in particular interest to us is this one, XBoot MGR, because this is the tool we can use to assess what's happening when we boot and log in to our machines. So let me run a trace and see what we will find out. I want to do a trace for the boot, and I want to make sure that it's running only for 10 seconds after logging into the machine. So what will happen when I press the button here, the enter button, is that it will shut down, it will restart. And as this is a virtual machine, we can have a quick look and see what is going on. Is it booting up? So now it's hooking in to the machine, logging everything that's happening when we boot. And shortly I will be able to once again remote into this machine to finish the trace. Oops. Third time. So, great. We let it finish before we start the analyzer. Excellent. It says the trace we were captured can now be found in C, users, administrator. So I'm going to open this trace. Yes, I do want to run Performance Analyzer unelevated. Thank you very much. And what we have here is a figure of exactly what has been going on during the boot. CPU times, we will see disk I/O, disk utilization, and exactly what the processes started and how long, which duration they lasted for. In particular of interest is this one. It's called services. Let me go into the events table to show you. This is a complete listing of each and every service starting on your machine while you boot. And why is this of interest? Well, you can easily find out if there are services that are causing delays in boot. But if you talk from an infrastructure point of view, what is the number one thing affecting performance during boot and login? If I say group policies, scripts, do you agree? Yes. So we are going to look for the group policy service. I know that it's called GPSVC, as you can see here. Group policy service. In Windows XP, group policies were processed in WinLogon. But as of Windows Vista and later, group policies have their own service. And therefore, we know that GPSVC is a part under a process called SVC host. This ID we will remember, because if we scroll down a little bit, we can see some additional information. A lot of colored dots. I'm going to filter out everything but group policies. So these are the actions around group policies during boot and login. We could hover over the dots to see some additional information. We see that here we have something starting. Group policy win start. And it has something to do with group policy power options. Okay. And if we look a little bit further down the road, what do we have here? We have something around group policy power options, and this time it's a stop. And do you notice that there is quite a significant time frame between those two dots? So this is where the group policy power options started processing, and this is where they finished off, taking quite some time. We could also do an overlay by process. And now we should remember which process ID it was. I believe it was 948. To see how this maps to the group policy events that has taken effect on this machine. So we can see between this line, this dot, and this one, we have quite significant CPU processing for the group policy service. If we also add the CPU sampling, we can see that the CPU has been at 100% during this time. Okay, so is this the only way we can use to actually find out what is going on with group policies in our system? No, there are easier ways. I will show you in just a short while. But before I do that, I want to give you a little quick tip. Because in Windows 7, if you go to Performance, Information, and Tools, you can click the Advanced Tools link to the left. And if you do, you will see, actually not on this virtual machine, but in a real world, you could see performance-related issues, such as applications, services, causing the machine to start up slowly, to shut down slowly. You can see drivers that are affecting performance, causing sleep, hibernation to be slow, slower than expected. So this is one very quick way to, on your machines, find out if there are any performance issues. So let's stick with group policies for a while, because they are the bad crook when it comes to performance during boot and login. No doubt about it. So what can we do to optimize group policies and scripts? Well, to start with, we have something when we talk about group policies, we have synchronous processing or asynchronous processing. And what's the difference between those? Well, synchronous processing means that we have a bunch of group policy objects. We apply them one by one by one in a serial order. Asynchronous processing, that's like kaboom. We process everything at once or as quickly as possible. And this is something that can improve performance. Evaluate, test, can we do without synchronous processing? The default in Windows 7 is that everything is run asynchronously. That is applied for group policies and for scripts. We can, of course, remove unnecessary group policies. We can remove unnecessary settings from group policies. What about login scripts, startup scripts? What can we do about them? My recommendation would be convert them to group policy preferences, which was introduced with Windows Server 2008, back in the days. And this is a rather common myth around group policy preferences. Although they were introduced with Windows Server 2008, do you actually need domain controllers running Server 2008 to be able to use them? No, you don't. You can use group policy preferences with Windows Server 2003 domain controllers as well. The benefits of using group policy preferences over scripts: you can map network drives, you can map printers, you can do most of the things you normally or traditionally has been doing in login and startup scripts. And what about domain controllers and file servers? Do they affect performance during boot and login? Yeah, they could very well do that. Why? Because group policies are served from domain controllers. If you are using roaming user profiles, they will be served from file servers. We will look a little bit later on how you can improve performance on file servers. But let's see what we can do to further troubleshoot group policy problems causing delays in our boot and login experience. I will once again go back to my client number one machine. I will fire up Event Viewer. Not only do we have the application and services log, in Windows 7 we have the We have the applications and services log, which is a great source of information when troubleshooting. And the good thing here is that we have an own category for group policies. And this is your key source to information to help you troubleshoot what is going on with the machine during boot when it comes to group policies. I'm going to filter this to see that we are only listing the one events of interest to us. 5326, 8000, 8001, and finally 5016, I believe it is. So this is filtering out only the events of a particular kind. I am going to show you. This one, event 5326. Group policy successfully discovered the domain controller in 500 milliseconds. If you look in your group policy log and see that this is rather much more than 500 milliseconds, there could be issues. I have seen an example where the Active Directory sites and subnet was not configured properly, meaning the clients were talking to a domain controller very far away, meaning the boot and login experience was of great impact. So that is one example of what you can find out. Another one of interest is the 8000. Here we can see, well, it completed the boot policy processing, the machine policy processing, in 9 seconds. And the same goes for the user. Completed user policy for the administrator in 5 seconds. But wait a minute. We had some problems with the power policy, right? And the good thing here is that if we look at event 5016, we can see information about each group policy extension and how long it took to apply. Group policy dry maps extension processed in 100 milliseconds. That's no time. Printer policy took 3 seconds. That's okay. Group policy power option extension processing in 100 milliseconds, no time at all. But let's see if we can. Here we have it. Group policy power options. Remember that we saw that it took a really long time when we looked at performance analyzer? Well, here we see that it's taking a little bit more than 8 seconds to process this policy. Now, is this normal for a power option to be applied? I would say no. But the point is, look in Event Viewer, look for each group policy extension and see which one are causing the most delays in boot and login. So now that we know that we have a problem, what do we do to actually find out what's going on? Well, we can use a good friend of ours. It's called a GP result. If I add the switch H, I can output all the group policy settings being applied for this machine and for this user. I'll put it as HTML in a readable format. And that is exactly what I am going to do. I will call it 05. So now it's generating the so-called resultant set of policies for this machine, for this user. Some of you might think, why don't we use the old and familiar RSUP command? Well, if we take a quick look at it, we will see that starting with Windows Vista Service Pack 1, this tool no longer shows you all the settings, which makes it kind of useless for doing this kind of assessment. So don't use rsop.msc. Use gpresult. That's the takeaway here. Let's see if it's finishing the report so we can open it and have a look at what's going on with this machine. There we go. Let's open this one. GP result 05. So we know that there is a problem with the power policy processing. Let's look that up. I scroll down, I see something called power options here. Okay, everything is good. We have a power plan for Windows Vista and later. Everything fine so far. But what if we do expand this one? Oh, we didn't have only one power plan. It seems like we have a lot of power plans. We can only speculate what has happened here, but probably the group policy technician fell asleep on the Control-V, C, Control-V keys on the keyboard or something. True story or not, I'm not going to tell. So we have quickly identified what the problem is and can remediate from this problem by removing all the duplicate entries here. So the thing is, look in Event Viewer for the particular events concerning group policy extensions. Find out what is going on. Maybe you need to restructure how you work with group policies. Split policies into smaller ones to make performance optimized. And as I said, reducing the number of group policies, reducing the settings in group policies will help performance. Converting the scripts, login scripts, startup scripts to group policy preferences will not only make it more stable, it will help make a more solid platform to troubleshoot, operate, and to work with. And it will also make it easier for you to migrate to a newer platform. Newer platform or client operating systems, which we are not allowed to talk about. or I am not allowed to talk about. Before we leave this little startup and login area, I would like to point out a couple of hotfixes that are of interest when we talk about performance during boot and login. We have two ones here. The first one is when you actually do run group policy preferences, you have item level targeting to security groups, then you should really look into this hotfix. The other one is causing a delay for minutes when booting your machine. So take this with you. Evaluate if you do need them, because they are hotfixes. They need to be downloaded separately. They are not delivered through Windows Update. And as with every update that is not released through Windows Update, the hotfixes do not get tested to the same extent as Windows Update patches do. So, once you get into the machine, once the user gets into the machine, he or she fire up some applications, experience they are working, so-so. They could perform better. Client-server applications, any application with network interaction, actually. What can we do about this? Well, we could upgrade application servers to Windows Server 2008 R2. Why would we want to do this? Well, there are network improvements. There are improvements to the SMB2 protocol, which is used in file transfers. I will get back to the SMB2 protocol shortly. The same goes with remote applications. Through internal services, remote desktop services, and possibly also if you run a remote access solution. Could be lagging graphics, overall bad performance. And what can we do about this? Yeah, once again, if you are running remote applications, terminal services, you can upgrade them to Windows Server 2008 R2. Because then you will get full use of all the improvements in the RDP protocol. There are significant performance improvements when we talk about RDP Protocol 7, which is the protocol used in Windows Server 2008 R2. If you're running terminal services, remote desktop services, you could switch to something called remote apps, which means instead of users logging into a machine, starting the application, possibly also starting other applications which affect performance on that machine. You can instead publish an application, put a shortcut to the desktop for the user. The user clicks the desktop icon, a remote session is created, but the user will only be presented with the actual application, which in some sense also can make performance better. You can also tweak the RDP settings to gain further improvements in performance if you are already using Windows Server 2008 R2 and remote desktop services. So let's switch back to our demo machine. I will go into our domain controller to have a look at some group policies. As a matter of fact, I have remote desktop services, and I do have a group policy for that prepared. It's empty. So now let's see what we can do to tweak performance for remote desktop services even further. Remember I talked about group policy processing, synchronous versus asynchronous processing. For Windows 7, everything is run asynchronously. But what about Windows Server? Everything run on Windows Server is applied synchronously, which also applies to any user logging in to a remote desktop services machine. So that's number one. We can go back to the client behavior. Let's see. And allow asynchronous user group policy processing when logging in through remote desktop services. If you enable this one, you will have increased performance logging in to the terminal services or remote desktop services. There are a few other tweaks you can do. Let's have a look at the remote desktop services section and the session host. If we're going to remote session environment, we will find a number of interesting group policy settings which we can use to improve performance. What I have seen is that if you do not allow font smoothing, you will see a performance gain. Maybe not so much on a LAN, but on a wide area network, definitely. So this one we can enable to get even better performance. Another one of particular interest to us is this one. Set compression algorithm for RDP data. So what is this then? If we do enable this one, we can choose how we want the RDP compression to be optimized. We can optimize it to use less memory, but typically what we want to do is optimize it to use less network bandwidth. And that is exactly what we are going to do, and what I recommend you to do. It will consume a little bit more resources on the servers, but it will improve user experience. And last but not least, let's have a look at the limit maximum color depth. So this is the settings for how many colors do you want to allow in your remote server environment. And actually, Microsoft has put a lot of work into optimizing this for 32-bit color depth to make a local user experience basically the same as a remote user experience. And the truth is, in most cases, performance is better if you select 32-bit color depth. But if you install remote desktop services in Windows Server 2008 R2, which color depth do you think is the default one? Is it 32-bit? It's 16-bit. So go in here and change the color depth to 32-bit. By setting all these group policy settings, you will gain a lot of performance improvements. And that's good for your users, of course, but it could also be of interest to you as IT pros, IT technicians. Because I still see a lot of people doing server administration using remote desktop. Familiar? Yeah. So if you do this on the service, you as well will be able to gain from these performance improvements. So we have come to the part where we talk about file handling, file server resources, network shares, dealing with files, working with files, documents, or network shares is not always the optimal solution, or almost do not always present the best user experience. This also impacts user profiles and folder redirections, which are hosted on file servers. And what can we do to remediate from these slow access to file server problems? Well, once again, we can make sure that we are using file servers, Windows Server 2008 R2. To be able to utilize SMB2 improvements. I've been talking about the SMB2 improvements a couple of times now. What does it actually mean? Well, since the early mid-90s, we have been using SMB1. Starting with Vista, Windows Server 2008, Microsoft thought it would be good to do some improvements to the SMB protocol. The SMB protocol is used when we do file transfers. Whenever you copy a file over a network, SMB is the protocol used. If we have a Windows 7 machine and it's connecting to a Windows Server 2008 machine, it will automatically default to SMB2.1. If you are connecting to a file server running 2003 or with the SMB1 protocol, it will fall back to SMB1. But the point is, not everyone is actually using Windows for file servers, right? If you are using a third-party storage solution, the chances are that you have SMB2 in that product is kind of good. The thing is, it's not always activated by default. So what you can do is look in the configuration, documentation, contact the vendor to be able to activate SMB2 for third-party storage solutions to be able to gain from these performance improvements, which we will look at in a short while. Before we do that, I would like to point out another hotfix, which is related to slow performance when you browse the My Documents folder under certain circumstances, if you use DFS and have redirected folders to that DFS share. So let's have a look at the SMB2.1 performance demo. Remember I told you about how I like to cook? In Sweden, what cooks or chefs do on TV is they prepare stuff. So that's exactly what I have been doing here. I have prepared a recorded demo of performance improvements in SMB2 protocol. So before we start the demo, I would like to point out that I have done numerous performance tests. I have been using a WAN emulator. I will not be using simulating a WAN at this point, but I will use it to show you the difference between SMB1 performance and SMB2.1 performance. So let's hit it off. What I am going to do is that I'm going to go to a Windows Server 2003 file server. I will copy an ISO file to our local machine. And we will look at the performance. Okay, so the file copy has started. Let's see what kind of speeds we are looking at. Yeah, 37, 38 megabytes per second. And I am going to cancel this any second now. And instead, we will look at performance through a Windows Server 2008 R2 server utilizing SMB2.1. Only to see that performance is significantly better than with the SMB1 file transfer. We will see higher throughput, which means that files are being transferred quicker. So So let's also have a look at, as I said, I have been doing numerous performance tests around SMB2, around SMB1 performance, comparing these two. And on LAN, we can see that for Windows 2008 R2, the performance is almost twice the speed as for Windows Server 2003. In some scenarios, in some, it's not as good. If we look on a WAN, that is a simulated WAN link, wide area network link, we can see that performance is better. Not as good as on the LAN, but it's a lot better if you're using SMB2 protocol. And these are based on my own. The tests are not scientific in any way, but I know that there are other benchmark tests out there that show greater performance improvements than I can show you here. So the bottom line is, do your own testing. Find out how to improve performance for file handling. So, branch offices. What can we say about these? Performance is often not the best at branch offices. Why is that? Well, servers are moving. They are being centralized, outsourced. Previously, we maybe had some servers on the branch offices. They are being removed. The users at this location work through a WAN link to access the resources. That's not very uncommon. And actually, the users at these branch offices suffer from all what we talked about here so far, because the problems at branch offices are often even worse than what you can see. And what can we do to improve the daily work for our users at branch offices? Well, in Windows 7, in Windows Server 2008 R2, we have something called branch cache. Now, what is that? Well, basically, branch cache can be configured for one of two modes. We have something called distributed caching mode, meaning that we can tell the clients on the branch office to cache information and then serve this to other clients on that same branch office. Option number two is that we can put out a hosted cache server. We can put a server with the only purpose of caching content, which the clients at that branch office are using. And this can be applied for SMB, file transfers, HTTP traffic, HTTPS traffic, bits traffic. This means we have support for SharePoint, all internal web applications. We have support for Config Manager client. We have support for WSUS, patching servers, clients, meaning all the clients do not have to collect, fetch the patches from a central location. And in larger organizations, we also have, if we are using Exchange, we probably have a quite large offline address book. We can use branch cache to further alleviate the problems around a slow user experience from branch offices. Once again, another remediation might be upgrading the file server, application servers to one Windows Server 2008 R2 to gain from the SMB2 protocol performance improvements. If you are using branch cache, there is this hotfix 267.5.6.11, which I would like to recommend to those of you using branch cache and offline files. But let's get on and see how we can use branch cache to make the lives at the branch office better. So I'm going back to my. Let's start actually with what we can do to activate branch cache. So remember, I said that we can use branch cache for SSCM, WSS, Exchange, etc. The first requirement is that you have to have Windows Server 2008 R2 because you need to enable the branch cache feature. When you do, web application and bits will automatically get support for branch cache. So everything you have to do is basically just go into the features in Server Manager and install the branch cache feature. Once you do, you have support for branch cache. And if we head over to, wait a minute. Sorry. Good, thank you so much. That's better. So I will do a repeat of that. In Server Manager, we activate branch cache feature. That's all we have to do to get branch cache support for web servers and bits traffic. While I'm still here, I will add, let's say, procmon. I will add this one to our branch cache share. No, I will not. I will add it to the initpub so we can use it from a web source. If we use branch cache for shares, what we have to do is go in properties, sharing, advanced sharing, caching. So this little checkbox actually enables branch cache for a file share. That's all we have to do after we have installed the branch cache feature. So let's head back to a client and see what we can find out. Before I do that, I will also activate perfmon to see. There are branch cache counters for performance monitor so that we can actually see what is going on and what we can gain from using branch cache. So head back to client one, finally. I will minimize everything. And I will now, before I do anything else, start performance counters on client one as well. I will go to our content server, which is te-fso1. And I will fetch the procmon exe. For the purpose of the demo, I think I should actually activate this VAN emulator so that we can play with the thought that this is a slow WAN link. The clients have a slow WAN link to the main office. And we have some latency as well. We don't need that now, so I will just go ahead and start this one. And let's see what will happen when we go back to client one. And we save this one. It will take some time to finish. Okay, so what it's basically doing now is that it has made a branch cache aware HTTPS request to the file content server, which then generated some content information. We will download the actual content to this machine, but it will not be cached at this machine. Actually, I think I was setting the WAN link to be. Slower. Okay, let's wait for it to finish. In the meantime, I will go to client number two. I will start the performance counters here as well to see exactly what is going on. I will initiate the transfer here as well. What was it? Procmon.exe, I believe it was. But let's go back and see if client one has finished. Yeah, pretty good demo. everything is running so slow, so we don't. It's too good. Let's see if we can get some connection with the file server. What I will do is I will do this. Come on. So, dual channel ISDN was not the very best, so I will raise this to 768 instead. Okay. I got my session back, it seems. At least I thought I was. Close this one. I will log in once again. So I will instead set this to 768. Okay. So now we should see some improved performance there. I will go to client 2 and I will fetch the exact same data. I will save it. Yeah, the speed is now a little bit better. So let's look at the performance counter and see what has been going on. We can see that it has been retrieved from the server. So this is the second attempt to download this particular file. But what is happening now is that it's fetching not only the file, but also the content information which client 1 generated when first requesting this file. Which means that this file will actually be cached on this machine, on this client. And that means that when client number 3 tried to download this, what do you think will happen? Well, let's see what happens. We fetch the procmon.exe once again, and it will download instantly. And why is that? Well, if we take a look at the performance counters, we can see that it has retrieved this information from a cache. So when client number 3 tried to download this content, it got the content information from the branch cache server. It did a request on that to all the other machines and said, hey, do you have this piece of information for me? And client number 2 answered, yes, I got it. So client number 3 downloaded this file from client number 2. We can also see that if we go to client 2 and look at bytes served. So this client has served this amount of information to another client using branch cache. So this is valid for HTTP traffic. If you are activating branch cache for file shares, you also have to activate a policy which creates these kind of content information hashes, which will cache the file content immediately on client number 1. Meaning that if you do this for files, client number 2 would have fetched the information directly from the cache on client 1. The bottom line is that branch cache will help improve performance on the branch office without a doubt. And information is a key part here, because if you improve performance, will your users notice? Maybe. A good advice is to inform the users about these improvements, performances that you make. They will appreciate this kind of information. Definitely. Further troubleshooting of performance for your Windows clients can be done using a tool called WeDoWrap, Risk and Health Assessment Program for Windows Desktop, which is a service available to enterprise customers. It is a tool which is based on Windows Performance Toolkit. It will find out bad drivers, bad applications, group policy, network issues. You can download this tool, but to be able to process the results, you must get help from Microsoft. So contact your technical account manager at Microsoft and see if you can take this tool to analyze and get a report on how to improve performance for the Windows clients. So, the key takeaways. Use Windows Performance Toolkit to analyze, troubleshoot, see what is going on during start and boot. Log in. Optimize group policies and scripts. Remove unnecessary group policies. Remove unnecessary settings. Upgrade key servers to Windows 2008 R2. File servers, domain controllers, remote desktop services. Tweak the RDP settings if you are using Windows Server 2008 R2 and remote desktop services. Implement branch cache for branch offices. My advice here is that implement this in distributed caching mode, and if you see performance gains and have the need for it, put out the server there to act as a caching server. Apply also the recommended hotfixes for Service Pack 1 related to performance. And all these together will help create a really good user experience. It will improve performance. So with that, I would like to thank you so much for taking the time to come here. I hope you enjoyed the show. Some other track resources. And last but not least, don't forget to fill out the evaluations. Thank you.